Blog Talk Radio.
Amazing, we were just talking about that last week.
Right.
And then the next, then the next thing to come in my mailbox is an article on that very same subject.
Get out.
So,
what they call confirmation.
Everybody's aware of it, so.
What do you say, Joseph?
I said everybody is aware of the dilemma with affordable housing. You know, people being able to buy a house now.
Yeah, and it's not just Charlotte, is it, brother? It's everywhere.
Yeah, I know.
I know it's been in D.C., Robert. I know, man. I don't know how y'all live up there, bro. But y'all doing it. Y'all doing it, though. You're making it look easy.
Man, it's work, though. It's work. I know. You know that's when you're good at what you do, when you make it look easy. But you know in your heart, ain't nothing easy about it. You know better.
You know better.
I got every magazine on my desk. Where did it get to?
We're going to let him have that little conversation over in Charlotte. Curtis, how you doing, brother?
Hey, man. God is good, brother.
Here's Not enough home. Innovative ideas to boost the affordable housing inventory. Page 20.
Can you give us one idea right quick, Joseph? Or do we need to come back to you on that?
Let me see. Sir. Can you give one idea?
Give us one, man. One innovative idea. And if you come up with some more later on, we'll talk about that. But since you have the magazine open.
The lower price housing inventories remain tight as of March, according to National Realtor Association. Nearly a year's worth of luxury home supply was for sale, compared with barely a 3 month supply in the lowest end of the market. Home price. So you got plenty of them houses for sale, you know, in the high market. But near them in the lower income, they're just not available. So let me see what they say they're going to do about that.
That's
one thing you can do is partner up with builders.
Do what?
Partner up with builders.
Builders. Who?
Yeah, builders.
Who partner up with builders? Me.
Real estate agent. Real estate agent. Partner up with builders, and you know, just tell them the kind of house, the price range of houses you need them to build.
Nice.
But don't they know that, Joe? Don't they know that already? Do they need a memo?
Well, Robert, the thing about it is, folks know most things. But until somebody starts getting behind them and pushing them, nothing ever happens.
Now, that is true. That much is true.
I mean, people know most.
Folks know you shouldn't kill, but they go out here and kill until you remind them that that's against the law.
Right. I mean, they know most things. I was thinking of an incident. Aaron, I could think of something. Maybe I'll think about it at the end of the show, but people are aware of what's going on out here. Sometimes, you know, and that's why the government has to step in, you know, to make people do, you know, what's right. But with that affordable housing market in Charlotte, when somebody comes to my office in that price range, I just don't know what to do. You know, because you know finding them a house is like looking for a needle in a haystack. And the problem is, too, with consumers, most of them have unrealistic expectations. You know, people come in and say they've been qualified for $200,000 and they want to live in South Charlotte. You don't find no house in South Charlotte for $200,000.
What you looking at over there, about $500,000 to $1 million?
Yeah. You know, then you might come in the high threes, but you know, you're talking $200,000. You know, you got to stay in a certain area. Just about everything in Charlotte now is somewhere close to $200,000.
But you know, Joe, what you said is symptomatic. What you said is symptomatic of many industries. People want to jump from 0 to 100 in 5 seconds.
Right.
Not understanding that there is a building process in about any type of accumulation of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And I've run into this with business owners. I mean, something as simple as a website. Somebody comes and say, look, hey, I want a website like that company right there. That company's been out there for 10 years and making $1 million a year. And
right.
It's their first day on the first day of being in business, and they want to go. They want to replicate this company who's out there, have been racking in the millions, and has established themselves, has gone through this process. So
right.
I would say that there are many, many industries that are experiencing that same example where you have to educate folks that look, accumulating something that's going to be sustainable, that's going to be long-lasting, that you can pass down and you can grow, you have to go through the process, including buying a starter home.
Right. That's right. You know, and the starter home may not be the best-looking house out here, but it's a good start. Just like I had a lady, she called me up. She said she wanted to fire her real estate agent, and because he wasn't finding her nothing fast enough. And so I asked her, how much has she been qualified for? She said about
$125,000, $135,000. Baby and his kids going to be her neighbor.
Yeah. And what's up? And I'm going to tell you what, Leon, I hear what you just said. But these people are moving from up north. They are moving right next door to Bay Bay now.
Yes, they are.
And they're buying these old houses, and they are renovating them.
Right.
That's what gentrification, that's the word. And that's going on all
right.
over Charlotte. And you still got a lot of people that, you know, that's the only price range they can qualify in, but they don't want to buy these houses. But these people from up north, and I'm just going to come out and say it, mostly white people. They are coming out here. They're moving in. They don't care who the next-door neighbor is. They don't care. They're coming there and put a $500,000 house right beside a house or what we call a shotgun house, a one-bedroom house with a one bath. They're coming there and put a mansion beside it. Go over there on West Boulevard, and it's right down through there off of West Boulevard. Over there on Statesville Avenue next time you're in Charlotte. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about. These people don't care. They ain't worried about who their neighbors are. If it's property in Charlotte right now, it is valuable, period.
All right. Well, folks, that's it. We got to get with the program, right?
Got to get with the program.
Yeah. Got to get with the program, yes.
Got to get with the program.
I think we have to go back into these neighborhoods. People that have the means, they have to go back into these neighborhoods and buy some of these properties. I do wonder if people of color were buying these properties, would the value continue to escalate? Would it slow down? Would it level off? Would it go backwards? I wonder how powerful is that.
You know the answer to that, too.
What's that?
You know the answer to that, too.
Is that a rhetorical question? Is that rhetorical?
That's a rhetorical question.
Okay.
Yes, sir. We know we know exactly what will happen.
Can y'all hear me, Leon?
Go ahead, Curtis.
Yeah, it sounds like Joseph is describing the gentrification process of the people coming in and buying these properties and renovating them. I think they're looking long term that Bay Bay ain't gonna be the neighbor long, and they are.
That's right.
They're coming in. They're going to keep on coming in and renovating and renovating until they're going to renovate Bay Bay and them out of there.
Right.
And the property is going to go up.
Isn't that the same scenario I just painted, though, how the process, you have to understand the process. If you're sitting on going out here trying to spend top dollar at a brand new house, it's not going to happen. But if you have the patience, you have the experience and know-how, to work this thing through the system, get the house, rehab it. I was telling, I was talking today earlier about programs like 203K loans where you can go out and get money on a mortgage and have the rehab money built into the mortgage. And this is what these investors and gentrifiers are doing. They're taking advantage of these 203K loans and coming into the neighborhood with their low interest loans, and in some cases cash, and rehabbing these homes and writing one check and then renting it in some cases back to the same folks they ran out, sometimes two or three times the value.
Right. And the way they run them out is they is the value go that would go up, and they do, like you said, they put that three times the what they were paying, and then they end up to the point where they can't afford it, and they start bringing in those other folks, the
yeah,
other white
people. That's right.
You know, so yeah, that's going
on. But let me tell you something. Let me tell you the flip side of that story.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side of that story, there's a program in Charlotte. They call it House Charlotte. And House Charlotte has been trying for years. That's program in House Charlotte. Because I was once upon a time, I was one of the instructors, you know, because they have to go through a series of classes. And once they finish the class, they pretty much guarantee they're going to get a loan. And the city of Charlotte gave them like a $7,500 incentive. You know, they can use it for down payment, closing costs, whatever they need to use that money for to get in that house, to give it to them. And, you know, a lot of people took advantage of that program, of course, and they only need about $500, to close on the loan, buy the house. These same neighborhoods, this is how Charlotte has been trying to get people to move in for years. These are the neighborhoods now that are being gentrified. And
yep.
Seeing these loans, and I have been trying to steer people towards these programs for years to get them in these neighborhoods. And the reason they were trying to get them in these neighborhoods is because the city of Charlotte, they felt as though if you have more homeowners instead of renters, you know, it would keep the neighborhood up. You know, because anytime a neighborhood, you know, it gets oversaturated with rentals, the neighborhood somehow collapses. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So in order to prevent that, they came up with these programs to try to get people to go into these neighborhoods and buy. And, of course, in the neighborhoods that they were, you know, they targeted were areas that were susceptible to investors going in there and buying up all the property. But people, for whatever reason, they were not taking advantage of it. They don't want to live in these neighborhoods. Even though the city of Charlotte going to let them move into a house, going to pay the down payment for them, closing costs and everything, but they don't want to move in there. So instead, I'd rather go rent than to go buy the house in one of these neighborhoods that a lot of people call not a good neighborhood. But from my perspective, there's no such thing as not a good neighborhood. I don't think what makes a neighborhood good are the people that live in it.
And if you did enough of the right...
The neighborhood, don't care whether they're rich, white, whether they're rich, black, white, or whatever, Hispanic, or whatever, the neighborhood is going to be okay as far as I'm concerned. I always had the attitude that anywhere children will go, I'll go. I'll go live. It don't matter to me. I don't get into this good side of town, bad side of town thing. I don't get into that.
Leon, that made a segue into saving and rebuilding the village, what Joe just said about the people wanting to just live in a so-called uppity neighborhood.
Hey, you can't afford to live there. That's the worst part about it.
Right, exactly.
That's the reason they raise the prices are so high, they don't want you in there. So don't go there. You can't afford it.
That's correct. And you know,
That sounds simple enough.
Sadly, that's what it's going to take. Forced back to the village. They're going to have to be forced back. Yeah, and they were forced in there through segregation and racism. And they're going to have to be forced back because we're scattered all out. We're running away from, like you said, most of the places where there are what we refer to as low income or public housing or whatever we want to call some of these communities. They're disparately populated by women and children.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I ask myself, guys, when do we stop letting other forces determine where the village takes place? Remember back during the right after slavery, we were forced into the village then because of lack of opportunities and lack of we prospered. Can we do this? Can we make this decision ourselves? Let's just decide we're going to make the village successful, not because somebody forced us. Let's support our businesses. Let's build up our neighborhoods. Let's water the village by our own decision, not because somebody forced us or because we couldn't do something else.
Yeah.
That's
because
where the education.
Let me tell you something else we can fight for in the village, because this is what's happening. See, right now, a lot of the village has become a disproportionately public house. And in the public housing community, if you have a so-called criminal record, right, they won't allow certain people in there. You know, it's going to be disproportionately men, black men. And so a lot of times these guys are not even allowed to live in public housing. So they're coming in and, you know, slipping in, tipping in, creeping in. And then once it's found out that they're creeping in, they had authority to throw all of them out. And so we really have to find a way to get our black families back together again and challenge this system, which would have women and children living in facilities where if a man comes in and he's not on the lease, or if he's not a part, if he has a criminal record or whatever, then everybody's thrown out. Because if you look at it, you know, the White House is public housing, and you got criminals living there, you got Trump there, you got the governor's mansion, they're all criminals. And so if we're going to continue talking about criminals can't live in public housing, then we're going to have to start checking all these people that we elect and all these people out, because it's similar to when people would say, you know, we want to start doing drug tests with certain populations of people before they get jobs or drug tests. You know, so it's a serious systemic problem on how families are being broken up as they become poor. And they're the systemic thing, another thing that, and you know, we saw it happen with our family. See, public housing has created a problem, because, you know, when we were growing up, daddy owned the house that we lived in, but we wanted to live with our friends in public housing because they had the paved basketball courts and stuff. But daddy knew better. Daddy was like, again, they had heat, air conditioning.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
But daddy could see the whole deal, and we couldn't. And so daddy was like, no, I'm going to stay in my little shack or whatever and patch it up where I can. And because daddy was a part of the village. But there's something about this public housing thing that we're going to have to investigate to see to what extent is this creating a problem for the village. And I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, it took real leadership skills for dad to convince us not that we should not live in the projects, because we wanted to go real bad.
I was packed up, buddy. When we moving? Ready to go? Cold.
Yeah, it took some serious leadership skills. How did we accept it? I don't remember. What was that sales speech?
Daddy decided he wasn't going to do it.
It wasn't that fancy.
We wasn't going to live
up to that.
Just
we not going.
That's all it took. Daddy said he ain't going
to
do
it. He wanted to go, but they wouldn't let him have that, because they didn't want to go live in the project and keep his house.
Right.
Wasn't going to do that. He wanted, like to me, he wanted to go live up there in the winter
time
and come back
his house out.
And come back home in the summer.
It should have had to be in the spring and the fall. It could have been this
summer. Hey, Robert, we're going to take a little break, man. And when we come back, guys, I need you guys, if you don't already, if you have not already seen it.
That fan just ain't going to work.
Right.
Where's Leon?
What I was going
to
say, brother,
Leon, you want to be talking about?
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want you guys to look up, if you haven't already seen them, Serena's pictures in the Bazaar magazine, Harper's Bazaar, whatever it is. She has really put it out there. I just want to hear you guys' opinion on it. Check it out. It's called The Unretouched Pictures of Serena Williams on Harper's Bazaar. They're really bizarre. You know, not all of them, but, you know. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to the Brothers for Real Radio Show. Our number to call in is 215-383-3872. I'd like to hear your opinion on Serena. That's what I just want to hear your opinion on. We can get all deep into it, but 215-383-3872. Brothers for Real. All right, be right back. First of all, I'm on the top floor. It's going to sound impressive, but it's not as impressive as it sounds. I'm on the top floor down here at the Hollow Center in Morgan, North Carolina. Downstairs, we have Flavors Water Ice. They're doing auditions for their community appreciation event they have coming up later on in this month, the last week in this month. Yeah, so they have about... I saw about 15 people downstairs. They're doing auditions. They're going to have a big event.
She's going to be down
the corner. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, it's going to be a big thing going on down there, man. They got something going on. So I'm excited about that. And I'll tell you guys also today, we met with the superintendent of Anson County Schools this morning, along with Kim Richardson Nesbitt with our Radio 1 in Charlotte. And we have decided we're going to take every Anson County school student from the first through the fifth grade to the Universal Circus at the, in the end of August. Gonna take every one of them. Every one of them. Every one of them.
All right.
And the school
all
system is in right in on it. They're gonna we're worried about how we're gonna get them there, but the superintendent said because it's a school supported event, they can take the yellow buses. So we're gonna have about, let's see, we got about 1,500 kids were taken, so it's going to be a lot of buses, divided by 50. It's going to be a lot of buses here today, Wade. We're going to have it called Anson County Under the Big Tent. So that's going to be August the 27th. So we're really excited about that. And, of course, we're still working with the Lion King down here with Anson Middle School. We're really excited about that. We had Mr. Maurice Moore here this past weekend. He came in from Texas. He has a movie studio called Motivate. That's to play on his nickname, Mo. Motivate Studios in down in Texas. So he's doing all those big things down there. And we're just so excited about what we can do for our kids. And I'm just going to say this and shut up about it. We are free. I tell people all day long, we are free. If you want to just cut the food with your freedom, that's what you do. If you want to find a way to make some differences in some lives, that's what you can do with your freedom.
Wow.
That makes sense, boys.
Makes sense to me.
Makes sense? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I tell you somebody else who's free. Serena Williams is free. So she's free to show her pure behind if she wants to, which she has done.
Yeah,
so
right now.
I've asked a lot of people what they thought about it. I asked one brother. I said, why do you think she did that? He said, I don't know why she did it, but I'm glad she did. I mean, then you got this 50 Cent guy. You got 50 Cent. He said only the his only response
right
was, God is good. Yeah.
I'm looking at it right now.
I know you don't say that. You said that.
I didn't want you to make
we
it.
We heard you the first time.
Okay.
Sir?
Yeah, we're trying to make sure it's Serena. We got to give it a good close look to make sure that it ain't, you know, Photoshopped or something.
I think it's her.
Hey, you know,
you
got to look at these pictures,
anyway.
You got to look at these pictures really hard, you know. You got to make sure.
I mean, really,
anyway, this is my take. Y'all cut it out. This is my take. This is my take.
What's your
I mean, Serena is one of the most powerful people in the world once you look at it, realistically.
Wow.
You know, with her, when I say powerful, I mean as far as being able to influence and, I just stick with that word. As far as being able to influence other people. Now, I just don't think that's the best way to do it. Now, here's why I'm saying that. You saw how little Coco was influenced by, well, you know, so motivated just to meet them and beat her sister. That was pretty cool. She was just so excited to be able to beat one of them. That's a funny way to look at it. But she was so excited to be able to beat one of them. Well, really, she's just excited to be able to play Venus. And, of course, she whooped her. So now you have people like Coco coming up behind her. I don't know whether that's what we want them to grow up doing, too, showing their butt, their naked butt.
That's pretty. Well, you know what, Leon, that's a good point. And I would like to get a woman's perspective, but because, you know, sometimes we're making these kind of calculations and trying to figure out what's going on in people's minds, what motivates somebody like Serena to, I looked at some of the blogs, I looked at Black Twitter, and it varies from blog to blog. On some blogs, you have every other person saying, cover your behind, I don't want to see that, your mother, your wife, why do you feel you have to do that, you're the most powerful woman in the world, you got all the money in the world, what is it that's motivating you to do that? I'm just going to say as a man, I don't know, but I am curious, I really don't know what motivates Serena or any woman with that kind of power to feel like they have to expose themselves to, I don't know what the point is. I'm not judging. I just don't understand it. That's all I'm saying. I wouldn't understand
she
the man
doing
it. She
has an exhibitionist mentality.
Oh, what?
An exhibitionist mentality.
Okay.
Yeah,
there are a lot of,
that's simple.
Okay.
A lot of people out here, they have that. It doesn't matter what type of profession they're in or how they grew up or whatever, but there are just a lot of people out here, they have that. And You know, remember back in the day when people started streaking? I mean, they just streak out from nowhere. Fuck it, naked.
They called it
and,
the streak.
Yeah, wearing nothing but a smile.
Will this have any type of downline negative effect on young women? Or are we just making the big to-do about nothing?
Well,
hey,
Rob, sure it's gonna,
I bet you we have a couple of women on the line. I bet you we have a couple of women on the line. I see two numbers
Some people say it's black girl magic. Is that it? Is that black girl magic, or is that mischaracterizing what black girl magic is about? Or
I mean, but you know, but we've been going through these phases with fashion for years. You know, it's like back when women started wearing mini skirts. I mean, they wore those skirts way, way up there. And then all of a sudden, they started bringing them down, and then women that's
Joe,
years old, no, they put
the,
five and
the
girls
the style
wearing short
never
skirts.
Been having your butt out, though.
Yeah.
Do we want that style to really happen?
You know, that you have to keep that in perspective. You know, she's not going to walk through the super mall like, you know, through the mall.
I disagree. There's some out there doing that.
I'm talking about Serena Williams.
But there's more people on watching that on the internet than in the mall. So actually, it's getting more exposure by being online.
What I'm saying is, she's just doing something, you know, just to get attention. Like I said, she just likes showing off her body because, you know, that's the way she dressed. She dressed a little bit bizarre, you know, during her tennis matches, you know, because, you know, once upon a time they had an issue with the way she dressed. But all of a sudden, you know, they just came to accept it. And I'm looking at the cover of...
Joseph Leon, I will say this.
Illustrated. December 21st, 2015, I went and got it out. And they have Serena Williams, Sports Person of the Year, on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and she is dressed very exotic. I mean, I see all of her thighs all the way up to her behind, and she's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. So this is not the first time she's done that. Y'all want me to email you a copy of this cover?
Please. I mean, no, we can do that. Sound like Joe's saying this is just a personal thing for her, that the village does not need to get involved in her business. Let her do her thing. She's an independent woman. If that's what she wants to do, she has the power, the freedom to do it. And it ain't nobody's business but hers. Is that the approach we should take?
Yeah, just like Marilyn Monroe.
Well, that's the only thing we can do, actually. Besides,
Marilyn Monroe was a cover girl for Playboy magazine. You know, 1953. I mean, but you know, people just accepted that's what it was. That's what she did. But you didn't start. Everybody didn't start walking around naked because Marilyn Monroe. Because when Hugh Hefner started Playboy magazine and Marilyn Monroe came out on the front cover, I mean, it was just that's what she did. You know, it didn't influence nobody.
Who knows?
Right, girl, everybody around wearing any long dresses, hobby socks on, and a panel of the shoes.
Here's my approach.
Right,
I'm going to say, and I've kind of helped formulate this. This discussion has kind of helped me formulate it, and I would be happy to hear any woman's opinion. I'm going to let Serena be Serena. Come in. I'm going to let Serena. Cleaning people here. Come on in. Hola.
I like Serena.
I'm going to let Serena be Serena, and we have to go back to the village and we have to lay the foundation down in our homes so that whether Serena or some other behavior that we may find distasteful using our own predilections, we have to lay down the foundation so that we set the example in our homes so that our children and ours are not influenced unduly by what they see out in the world. And let Serena, as long as she's not breaking the law, if she wants to do that, more power
to
her. It's not something I would want somebody in my family to do, but that's just me. Do your thing.
That's right. That's
I'm going to take care of mine.
Right, Coach.
That's all we can do.
That's all you can do.
That's the thing about it, share our opinion.
And that's another thing, too, when people start criticizing, you know, what these guys, you know, a lot of these guys, rappers and all these other folks, I don't like what they do. But when people start saying these people are influencing our youth, and which they may be influencing our youth. But the problem is your parents, those are supposed to be your first role models. That's who's supposed to be your role models. And when and seeing parents, if they would do their job, regardless of what Serena Williams does or what Waffle Flopper Flame or whatever his name is does, it won't influence your children.
Huh? Joe, this is where it gets tricky. It's more challenging, or it's harder for a child to be influenced when they come from a solid two-family home. Or even single family home. Many of the young people who are the most easily influenced do not have that. And so they're pretty much kind of on their own, and they're much more likely to yield to peer pressure and to influences. And so we can't tell influencers to just do whatever the hell they want to. They do have some responsibility. The question is, does that apply to, in this case, to Serena?
I guess if you want to
in my opinion, is yes. My opinion doesn't count. It doesn't matter here to her, of course. But my opinion is people in influential positions must be conscientious and care about. I mean, it's sad. I mean, it's like becoming a minister. Once you become, once you get that title, people are you're an influencer, you know.
Well, let me say
so
this.
It's kind of like you have to be conscientious. I mean, that just comes with the territory, but you're not required to.
Let me put it
that way.
Okay, this is Curtis Gatewood. How y'all doing? Look, this
is my
thing.
Great,
man. All right. Where are the church folk at? See, that's the problem. You have so much influence coming from people that are so distant from actual children and young people who are growing up. But if the church folk would step up, if the role models would step up who are supposed to be in the community, whether they be teachers, whether they be organizational leaders, whether they be – see, they could offset whatever these celebrities decide to do. See, back in the day when there was Marilyn Monroe, we had a village. We had people in our families. We had our parents who were Christians. We had people across the street who cared about us. They were influences. The principal might have stayed across the street. The teacher might have been on the other side of the street. Grandpa, grandma, they were all a part of the village. The problem is, like you said, these celebrities are beginning to look like we're giving them more responsibility. Who we really shouldn't have to if we had the church and the people who are supposed to be righteous who are becoming more visible. See, Serena didn't say she's a preacher. She didn't say she's out to be the advocate for justice and morality. But we do have people who claim to be that who are absent. So the people
who claim
to be righteous.
Good point.
And the people who claim to be all about criticizing people like Serena and all those folks, where are they? See, they're not in the community. They're not visible, and they should be more visible. If they were more visible, then there wouldn't they would have such an impact on today's youth. So that is the problem. We have the people who are supposed to be righteous and people who would do all the judging. They're absent. They're missing in action. So that's the problem.
Hey Curtis. I remember years ago somebody was complaining about something. Well, you know what I said? I said, well, the devil doing his job. I said, Christians just need to do theirs.
The devil's gonna do what the devil does.
Don't
call Christians in hiding. That's the
problem. Right. I said, the devil gonna
Hello.
Do his job. Biggest problem.
They're going to be talking about Serena. They're going to be talking about all the gangbangers. They're going to be talking about all 50 Cent. They're going to be talking about all of them. But they're nowhere to be found. They're nowhere to be seen. The Bible says that your light so shine that men may see your good works. And then once they see your good works, that's when you get a glory to God. So it's not me. It's not about my title. It's not about my position. But it's because I'm doing good works. That's because I do believe in God. And God is driving you to do something.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let me cut
Hello.
Right quick. Ladies and gentlemen, the number to call is 215-383-3872. And we do have a call on the line. Caller, can you talk to us?
Hello, this is Brenette Colson Richardson.
Hey, Brenda Colson Richardson, how are you?
Good. I was listening to Curtis. And Serena do sometime after her match say she goes to a Jehovah church and she says she wants to give first honor to her Jehovah. So she is putting it out there that she's supposed to know Christ. So I work with children every day. And they role models. They are going in this generation time. They're gonna go with their idol and their role model, which they don't supposed to. But that's what I'm seeing. Like in camp, that's what I'm seeing. They mimicking people that they like, and I'm like, where do you get this from? And it's come straight with them. I'm like, where do you get this from? So with Serena being a public figure, And mm-hmm. she is representing a lot of us. Like the mm-hmm. girl told Venus, she was a role model, and she was so happy to play her and all that. So we do have children looking at that. But I'm not going to put it all on her, because the training must come from the home.
Yes.
It got to come from the home. You got to know what your children are listening to. You got to know what your children are watching. And, like, if I've seen that and my child, no, and I'll say, this is what something we will not do. Like, I'm in model. Model people, they do all kind of, a certain job I will not take, because I know who I'm representing. So if they come with me and say, okay, I need you to take off your clothes and take pictures, I'm like, that is not the model I want to go. I don't want to be associated with that.
Right.
I'm not. That is not what I'm going to do.
Right.
But see, as a woman, men, that is first thing they look at. That is the lady. So with her doing that, that kind of put a so eye there, thinking that's okay. That's what I'm thinking. People are thinking that's okay to do that.
Right.
That's my take.
I get what
she's saying, because, you know, we're not here to condone what she's doing. My only point is, if you got one Serena who decides to do what she's doing, but you got a whole church packed full of so-called sanctified Holy Ghost saved Christians, and if those Holy Ghost sanctified Christians would come out and let their light shine and do the right thing, it would offset some of this stuff. You see what I'm saying? Because we don't have control over her. But we do have more, I would say, control over who we are, especially if we say we're Christians. And like I said, if she's doing that and she says she follows God or Christ or Jehovah or whatever she's saying, again, that, I would say, that's going to be between her and her God. I'm not here to judge her.
Yeah, that's right.
Sure,
she got to pay for
that. That they shouldn't be doing, who say they follow God. We got some people who stray in different ways. We got some people who gossip. We got some people who cheat. We got some people who lie. That could be one of her shortcomings. The key is, we need more people who say they're doing the right thing to become more visible.
But you know what?
Because
you know what I think?
You know that with the church is not, and I'm in the church. The church is not in that. They are not going out to do that. There is, to me, it's all about how much money they can put in, how many members they can draw in, they can do instead of going out, which we spoke, the Bible tells us to go out into, but they're not doing that, because I have learned, I've been to a very known church in here, and they're not doing that. It's how many members they can get in, how much you tithing, how much you going to come in there to give them the money. It's about that. It's not about reaching out to the community to try to get the children that don't have a two-home family that's not getting that. Right. They are not there, and that's the church today, and that's why I kind of get kind of upset with a lot of them, because should be their focus. Their focus should be out in the community, because that's what Jesus did. He went out in the community. He wasn't inside. He was out.
That's right.
You know,
like you said, Serena. That Serena have to give an account for her. And a sin is a sin, no matter what it is, big, little, small. They all in God's eye, they're the same. So a lie, like you said, that's the truth. But see, with the church, they not doing that. So if the parents is still, I put it on, if the parents is not doing what they supposed to do, and they're looking for the church, which you got very small churches maybe doing that. The church is not going to do it. When we, like you said, when we grew up, we had somebody that would take something and pop us with, and they want our parents when they seen us kids doing something. They would pinch you, they would get your ears, they would do that. But see, we don't have that generation now, because now they are scared to, because the police, they have the police be called on them, so we don't have that. So
that's correct.
That's true. That's good. Well, God, what I was going to say about what Curtis was saying a while ago, we had all of that supervision, all that influence, and we still got in trouble. we still went astray a little bit. So imagine what these kids are, they what influences have on these kids who have basically no moral compass at all. I mean, that's all they have.
Hey, Leon. But you know,
yes,
Leon,
sir.
this is one of the challenges. And like I say, I'm not here to beat up on Serena. I think Serena's a grown person. She's got the money, the means to do whatever heck she wants. But that does not absolve us, any of us. That does not absolve any of us of the fact that we are influenced, that we influence people. And anytime, whether you're a celebrity, whether you're on the radio, you're on TV, you're whatever, people are watching you. Now, this is where it gets tricky, because Serena can have her backside out, but she has security guards. She's she's made her money. And there's really, she can do whatever the heck she wants. But the people that she influences don't have those same type of protections. They've still got to go out here and find jobs. They've still got to go out here and walk these streets without bodyguards. They've still got to go out here and deal with the public, whereas they may be under this illusion that it's okay to do this even though I'm in this different status category. And it's going to be very difficult. You can't go to a job interview. And of course, I'm saying that's an extreme. They're not going to go like that, but they may do some variation of it, of exposing themselves in situations that are not proper. And I think that's one of the challenges and some of the danger that influencers do, that when they put out these images, and the people that are being influenced, they're not equipped to differentiate between their status and the status of the person that's influencing them. And that's where the danger comes in.
Brothers, we're going to get off this subject right quick. Ladies and gentlemen, the number to call is 215-383-3872. I did want to talk about finances just a little bit, and I wanted to get your brother's opinion. I tell you, I was in a bank today, well, a credit union today, and the conversation came up of why do people go to these people with these high interest rates. And one of the reasons is people don't have confidence in their credit score. But the person was telling me, that's true. But the person was telling me that people should at least come in and try at their local credit union first. I mean, at least come in and try. I mean, you're looking at the difference between 10% interest rates. I mean, a difference.
That's
something
else we're going to have to talk about, Leon and Robert and Joseph. We're going to probably have to have a whole show to talk about how we need to address some of the systemic setups that black people and people who are struggling with their credit are having to face when it's time to buy a home or a car, how these interest rates are basically designed to make the poor poorer and the rich richer.
Yeah.
And, it's a real problem, man. I mean, because these people should... How in the world, we're going to have to ask this question to the highest levels of government, and we're going to have to put it out there for the people. How in the world can it be justified that you're going to charge people who are struggling with their credit, you're going to charge them more? How is that supposed to be? How can you justify charging me more because I pay my mortgage or my rent late, but you're going to charge me more? How is that going to resolve the problem? So this is just a scheme and a
way to be the other way around, right?
People who are systemically forced into poverty, especially who are disparately African-American people, poor people, black people, find a scheme or a reason to charge them more or make it harder for them to break out of a cycle of poverty. So it's a scheme that we have to address.
It's the same thing with these overdraft fees. People who have overdrafted their account obviously are lacking money, resources, and funds. You're going to make it worse. You're going to make it worse by charging them $40, $35 to $40 when they've already demonstrated they don't have money in the first place.
They don't have the money. And you're going to charge them $30, $40 for a return check. And on top of that, Robert, a lot of people who do not have money a lot of times are a good way of starting on a bank account, they end up having to pay so much to cash a check just to They come into a bank, the check is drawn on the bank. All they got to look up there and do is just see the money, and it's there.
And they got plenty of it.
Those people don't have an account. They're going to charge them a big amount of money to cash that check. I mean, it ought to be at least a law that says, look, if the check is drawn on your bank and the people have shown you their identification,
right,
you ought to be safe enough to cash that check.
That's right.
But,
you see, and I run it, and that's really irritating. It's like our young lady came to work for me. You know, she wasn't really established in town. So, you know, I got ready to pay her, I just wrote her a check. And she called me up. She said, Mr. Gate, what do you people want $7 to cash my check? I go, what?
$7.
Yeah. And they looking right there at the counter. They know the check good.
Looking right at the money.
Looking right at the money.
Back in the vault. Looking back there at it.
Huh?
I mean,
money.
And they got computers. They can take the money out and block.
But I'm
gonna tell you something. Make sure they got their money. But they
charge those people, man.
And there are a lot of poor people that do not have a checking account or something like that because they've been had their checking account closed because they got those overdrafts that Robert talked about earlier.
Right.
So they can't have
it. Credit scoring itself is a scam. The reason I say it's a scam because most of the criteria that grows in the criteria is that past discrimination created.
Exactly.
And now they have compiled that into determining what your credit score is. My thing is, it should be that if you go apply to buy something, either you get it or you don't get it.
That's correct. Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? See, but they couldn't
do that.
They can't do that because if they did that, they wouldn't make any money. So
the only thing
they're doing is they just come up with a scheme. How they can keep siphoning money out of poor people. For example, and the same thing is true in insurance. They do credit scoring with insurance. You know, and I keep saying why somebody with a low credit score are more likely to have an accident with somebody got good credit.
Now they do credit scoring with job applications.
We need to be on CNN with this discussion right here because I'm telling you.
And I made a decision. Now, just like I can legally charge people fees. I can legally charge people fees. You know, it's like somebody come in to make a payment in cash, I can charge them a fee. They let the insurance lapse and got to reinstate it, I can charge them a fee. They come in and renew the policy, I can charge them a fee. They apply for insurance. But I made a decision in my office. I said, we are not going to charge anybody any fees. I said, the reason we're not going to do that because the people that are paying these fees are people that are struggling in the first.
Exactly.
Amen.
If
you're going to be a Christian, you're going to have to be a Christian in everything that you do. Because the Bible says, take not the ways of your oppressors. And I've told a lot of my customers that. I said, that's what the banks do. I said, that's what the credit card company do. That's what the finance company do. I said, we're not going to do that.
Amen, bro.
Keep you
the property
debt. They have a scam to keep you to be poor. They're taking
it's a scam to keep poor people poor.
They're charging those overdraft fees, force you to check close your account up, then charge you for cashing check because you don't have an account. They just take you in every way they can to force
you to
pay them more money to keep you into that cycle of poverty and keep them big boys getting rich.
Why are they making record profits while they're doing this.
We got to deal with it.
Making records.
That's a show we're going to take on the road right here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Brothers, our time is about out. You guys on it tonight, man. Y'all are like, y'all are like fired up tonight. I appreciate it. Good conversation,
yeah,
brother. Thank you, Sister Richard.
This is the bread and butter discussion right here.
I had a little Hispanic guy came to my office last week, and he came in. The only thing he wanted to do, he wanted to add a car on and get a new ID card. So he added a car on, and I gave him a new ID card. And I said, thank you very much. He looked at me, he said, no charge? I said, no, man. I said, we don't charge for stuff like that. And he looked at his buddy, and looked at each other. He went in the parking lot. He said, man, he said, buy you some lunch or something. He gave me $20. But I told him, I said, man, we don't charge for stuff like that. We don't do that.
Time I'm charging for the insurance, right?
The only thing I do is charge you with the insurance.
Boy, I tell you, meet more Christians in this world.
And that's another market. Y'all, that's another market they take, they make it, they are making a killing off. They're making a
need
killing
more money
off
in this world.
That we have a lot of these people who are undocumented, who are not opening up accounts and things like that. So they have to pretty much take a chance on where they shop, where they buy food, where they bank. And they take it full advantage.
He just completely rip them off. Rip them off.
Greedy son of a gun out here. Greedy son of a gun. Man.
It's just unbelievable.
Very greedy. What I'm saying is a lot of
greedy. Ladies and gentlemen,
folks,
brothers.
Just
brothers, we're going to have to go off the air with this, man.
Folks.
Number to call is 215-383-3872. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Brothers for Real Radio Show. We love talking to you, and we love talking to each other, but we really do appreciate it when you call in and share some conversation with us. Thank you, Ms. Brenda Colson Richards, for calling in tonight, as always. And God bless each and every one of you, and we'll be talking to you next Wednesday, guaranteed. Good night.
All right, brother. Y'all take it easy, man. Y'all have a good night.